It's called Roll for Initiative. I set up my screen and get out my maps and dice. Roll for initiative, I say. A good dungeon master doesn't kill the players in his charge. He lets them kill themselves. That's how I see it, anyway. I don't mean to suggest that I'm a great DM. On the contrary, if the last 3 weeks have taught me anything, it's that I don't know what I'm doing. I never should have agreed to this. Having the party sacrifice their own lives, be it through inaction or poor decision-making, will be the only way to end this reunion. It will also provide the illusion of free will, while in actuality, I've been in charge of their fates the entire time. I'm sitting at the head of my dining room table. To my right sit Jamin and Carlo, and across from them is the new guy, Gregor. He lives at the end of the street. Dig Dug is at the opposite end of the table. Jamin's a dwarf fighter, and Carlo rolled a half-elf wizard. Gregor is playing a wood elf rogue, and Dig Dug is a human cleric. They will all be dead soon. All the lights are on, and the remains of 5 pizzas cover the table. Gregor is eating a slice with a knife and fork. I'm on my 2nd IPA, maybe my 3rd. Moira has taken the boys to a neighbor's house to use the pool and watch movies on an outdoor screen. They know that Daddy is a big nerd. Dig Dug has eaten enough of Moira's hummus to spackle the garage. He will die first. For tonight's session, I found a copy of the Queen of the Demon Web Pits module in the attic and spent a few hours redrawing parts of it because Carlo has probably committed every word to memory. Instead of spiders, I have skeletons. The demon web is now a series of catacombs. Using graph paper, I remade the spider ship into a skull shape. Because I didn't run them through Vault of the Drow first, I will need to fudge the start. No big deal. Queen Lolth is going to destroy them. She can only be hit with magic weapons, and she can dispel magic each round. This is all true, by the way. This is old vintage Dungeons & Dragons. I will enjoy every moment of their agony. I want their characters to die so slowly and with such humiliation that they never ask me to play again. In a matter of hours, by midnight tonight, every man at this table will have unfriended me on Facebook. Nevertheless, I should have read more of the Dungeon Master's Guide before now so Carlo would stop lawyering me about the rules, except, of course, that I've already put far too much time into this game, not to mention the inconvenience for Moira. She and I have known Jamin and Carlo since college. I had not seen them again until they begged me to run this campaign. Dig Dug graduated the same year that Moira and I did, but I don't remember him playing with us back then. The fact that he's the most polite member of the group will not save his skin. Looking over the assembled party, it occurs to me that as far as my social life goes, my greatest ambition is to have a series of lifelong friends whom I am never, and I mean never, required to spend time with. I roll a d20 behind my screen, 7. I have a habit of rolling for initiative right away so the players don't know when there is danger lurking beneath their feet. I rolled an 18, I tell them. What did you guys get? I write down the order of attack. Not that it matters. I push back my chair and go to the kitchen for another beer. Our deck overlooks the yard and Wissahickon Creek Park. The lawn glows with lightning bugs. My son Harry still thinks they are will-o'-wisps. He and Jason have an authentic full-size teepee at the edge of the property in which they play European occupiers and Lenny Lenape. Harry once came inside crying because his brother put smallpox in a sleeping bag. I think it was baking soda. That's not funny. Here's why I never should have agreed to do this. 20 years ago, me and Jamin and Carlo lived in the same dorm. The main line was never exactly a hotbed of intellectual stimulation, and I had what we will call trouble adjusting to life away from home. That antisocial behavior lasted until my sophomore year, when I got accepted to join Jamin and Carlo's 3-nights-a-week campaign. My first character was a half-orc assassin. The rules were different then. Everything was different then. Those guys were a year ahead of me. Their game, and it remained their game no matter how long I participated in it, ran until the winter break before they graduated. They had a rolling roster of temporary players, all of whom got kicked out after a week or two. 3 of us and Farley were the only regulars. The idea for this new campaign started a month ago on Facebook. Like all rational and sentient beings, I hate Facebook with a frothy passion. And like all rational and sentient beings, I check it at least twice an hour. Carlo had posted a scanned-in photograph from an old session. The four of us sit around the common room table. Carlo's head sticks up like whack-a-mole from behind his DM screen. There must be 300 dice on the table, several dozen painted miniatures, a fiend folio, and at least two copies of the 144-page Elric and Cthulhu-era Deities and Demigods. Do you remember that one, Chip?
No.
Farley is wearing a Viking helmet. He was the smartest person I've ever met. He made the people around him smarter, even us idiots. We look happy. Within minutes of the photo going up, Dig Dug sent me a friend request. What I normally do in these situations is accept the request and then unfriend the person a few days later. I never got the chance. Doug began pestering all of us to put together a campaign like we had in college, and then Jammin' and Carlo jumped in. We have to do it, they said. It'll be like old times, they said. I held out as long as I could, but every excuse I mustered soon dried up. Even Moira said I should do it. It'll do you some good, she said. There was no way I was about to venture into whatever dank werebear cave I assumed Jammin' and Carlo were living in. Their dorm room had squirmed with month-old takeout cartons. I can still smell it. They run a hobby shop in a strip mall out in the Brandywine Valley. It must take them an hour to get to Manayunk, and that's without Google traffic. My wife said she would be cool with having everyone over as long as she didn't need to clean up after us. She knows what Carlo and Jammin' are like. I look out over our manicured yard. According to the monster manual, will-o'-wisps are riddled with despair. Excuse me. They are agents of evil. Moira and I hooked up for the first time the night Farley crashed my Honda. Back at the table, Queen Lolth grows ever more hungry. I get myself situated. You're in a tavern, I say. Seriously? Jammin' asks. His hair is so dirty it looks wet. Yes. You suck at this, he says. Why isn't Carlo DMing? Dig Dug asks. Ask Carlo, I say. You are fully rested and you have all of your hit points back. A tall humanoid in a hooded cape stands at the bar with his back to you, but you get the sense he's aware of your presence. I conduct a perception check, Gregor says. This is his first campaign. He and his wife are German. They are the closest thing to friends we have in the neighborhood. Moira is at their place right now. I'm already DMing two games, Carlo says. He wanted to do it anyway, Jammin' says, but I talked him out of it. My mistake. Roll perception. 14. All day? Add your modifier and your prof bonus. I thought Germans were supposed to be fastidious about the rules. Sex Zen. You perceive that he is tense, but not necessarily aggressive. Sex what? That's not how perception works. Perception is more for seeing things that are hidden. Jesus, fine, whatever. You don't perceive anything being hidden in the tavern. How many people are inside? Do you mean people or humanoids? Humanoids, I guess. Try attacking them with preparation H. That's hemorrhoids. I roll a saving throw against ass pain. The game will go on like this for several more hours, and then they will all die. Queen of the Demon Web Pits is one of the most challenging modules ever published, and my modifications made it even deadlier. The party needs to be balanced, which I suppose this one is, but there should be at least 8 characters. Tough shit. The humanoid at the bar is Crowpaz, an emissary from the village council who has come in search of adventurers for hire. The party's job tonight is to travel to the nether plane and descend into Lolth's lair and retrieve the town's sigil. First, however, they must make peace with the huntsmen of the Feywild, in whose protected land they will find the portal to Lolth's massive royal lair. Crowpaz gives them each a healing potion and the choice of weapon upgrades from the local armory. They set off. What the guys don't know yet is that the only way to return from the abyssal plane is by opening a locket around Lolth's neck. It will be impossible to escape until she lies dead. If they are to return to the village and collect their rewards, they must first defeat her and her handmaidens. They will not make it back. Spoiler alert. During one finals week, Farley heard about an off-campus bash some Bryn Mawr students were throwing. 12 Limited rented a mansion next to a golf course. They were getting evicted at the end of the month. The party had been going on for a week. Even Jammin and Carlo agreed to go. It was my turn to be designated driver. A loose jazz combo huddled around a baby grand covered in Puma Spot watermarks. A card game involved bowling pins and shots of rum. The Rolling Rock pony races had begun in the dining room, and in the kitchen, 6 2-person co-ed teams played Edward 40 hands with their khakis and boxer shorts and panties at their ankles. Smoke clung to the windows. As usual, people gravitated toward Farley. He reached for the duct tape, and I went out back for some air. A moderate snow fell on the skinny dippers and empty kegs bobbing in the pool. The cold chewed through my flannel shirt. The irony, of course, is that I did stay sober. The combo played all the notes around stormy weather without stepping on the actual melody. I wandered through the huge house, past the murmuring stoners and half-dressed mating rituals in progress. My boredom felt like a jail sentence for trumped-up charges. On the third floor, I heard classical music behind a closed door, solo cello. I stood still, and the hardwood stopped creaking beneath my boots. The door flew open. "What are you doing?" Moira asked. "Go away." I didn't know yet her name was Moira. She was the only other not-drunk person on the premises. As soon as I said, "You're really good," it occurred to me that the music was still playing behind her. "At what?" "I'm sorry to bother you," I said. "I don't really like my friends even when they're sober. I'm bored out of my skull." "It's Starker performing Bach," she said. To this day, she still indulges me with that same not smiling smile. "I'm studying, but you can come in if you promise to be quiet." She had a dress on that buttoned all the way up the front and rag wool socks. The oak door groaned on its hinges. "The dwarf feels a kind of trembling in the earth," I say. "That's lowercase e, right? As in Middle Earth?" "Fine. From the ground. The big thing beneath your feet." "I'm rolling for perception. 4. Scheiße. Your rolls suck. You can use my dice. You are not very perceptive. It's impossible to locate the vibration, but it might be growing in intensity." The front door opens before I can have them roll again for initiative. Jason runs into the dining room and yells, "Nerds!" at us and retreats giggling up the stairs. Harry comes in and scavenges for pizza. He is wrapped in a wet SpongeBob towel. Red juice covers his mouth. He grabs the Beholder miniature and floats it over the table, making spooky sounds. The Beholder is his favorite monster. The gelatinous cube is his other favorite, and the Will-O-Wisps out back. They are all his favorite. The atmosphere changes when Moira comes in. "You, get in the tub," she tells Harry. The sari she's wearing clings to the wet bathing suit underneath. My wife is still extremely attractive, even more beautiful now than we were in school. "Let Daddy play his nerdy game," she says. "Hey, Moira," Jammin says.
"Are there kids here?"
"Hello, guys. How's the game going? Your husband is a terrible dungeon master." "The hummus was excellent, thank you. I require a new set of dice. Kobolds are dicks." "Language," Moira says. Jammin shouldn't be allowed around children. "Sorry, jerks. Kobolds are jerks." "Harold, upstairs, now." Harry grabs a bouquet of Twizzlers and marches up to his watery fate. My wife goes to the kitchen. She fills a kettle and puts it on. The sliding door opens and closes. "You're a lucky man," Dig Dug says. "Kobolds are dicks," Harry yells down the stairs. We listen to the cello suites on repeat. Moira, still dancing in those days, had control of every motion and intake of breath. Janos Starker performed a series of small miracles. The winter sky brightened a little bit. A pair of Doc Martens shook the floorboards down the corridor. I detangled myself from Moira and poked my head out the door. "Keep it down," I said. "People are sleeping." "We need to get back," Benjamin said. He had trouble standing. "I have a chemistry exam and, shit, 2.5 hours. Even asleep, Moira seemed composed and graceful. The semester was over. The mansion was about to be emptied. If I left, I might never see her again. The night's spell could be broken forever. "Are you okay to drive?" "Not even close." From Bryn Mawr to Villanova is a straight shot down Lancaster Avenue, 2 miles tops. "Get Farley to do it," I said. I threw him my car keys. They hit him in the chest and fell to the floor. He swayed on his feet to pick them up. I closed the door. The kettle whistles, and Moira comes inside for a moment and then rejoins the Will-O-Wisps. That mansion burned down a few years ago. There are condos there now. Lolth's skeletal minions rise up scratching and crawling from the damp ground. Dozens of them come shambling from every direction until they encircle the party like the concentric rings in a decaying tree stump. The stench of moldering flesh fills the air. The creatures do not yet attack. I could have driven them safely to campus. Even with the snow on the ground, I would have been back to Moira's room in 20 minutes with coffee and fresh pastries from Walter's, and Farley would be sitting here with us now in his Viking helmet. My fist is clenched so tight that the D20 has indented my palm. If I have to be honest with myself, the answer is no. I would not do anything different. I would not risk losing all of this, Moira and the boys, the TP and the will-o'-wisps, even if it meant having Farley back. At this point, I can have Crow Pass send in the cavalry to save everyone's bacon, or I can wipe out the entire party and be done for good with this stupid game and these so-called friends. Let's stop here, I say. We'll pick this up next Wednesday. Their death sentences have been commuted for another week. It is a work night, Gregor says. At least you don't have a 36-mile commute. I'm not a good person. I understand that. It's a fact I can live with. The guys collect their things and leave much too slowly. The dining room is a pigsty. I turn off some of the lights and pour the remaining half of my beer down the drain. On the deck, the summer air is muggy but tolerable. A citronella candle burns on the railing next to where Moira left her bikini bottoms to dry. I pull a chair next to hers and she reaches for my hand. We still own those cello suite CDs. They skip now, but we keep them around.